Hello and welcome once again to the Dad and Son Revolution podcast.
Welcome.
And today we're going to be talking a little bit more about what we're planning for the coming days and weeks.
We'll also go into the economy of a Trump world and how that sort of affects and how the economy as it's reported in the stock market is different and how the economy affects capitalists and normal people has some differences to it.
That's right. Kind of exploring a little, unpacking that, and just in the context of the transition to this new kind of situation is being dealt with. We also got a plan for doing a kind of deep dive on a few different proposals that are out there over the coming podcasts. So stay tuned. We're excited to bring this to you. And we'll be back with you in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
It's now been several days of adapting to the new reality. Today we're going to reflect a little bit on where we're at and how we want to take the podcast forward. Maybe we'll just start by thinking a little bit about what we've been seeing or feeling or hearing from public sources or from our friends and neighbors. Like, what have you been seeing or feeling, maybe?
I've been listening to the radio some, and I've heard about the economy, like on like NPR Marketplace and stuff. And it's like interesting because like since Trump talked too much about like tariffs and stuff, people have been investing in like domestic production and stuff, which is interesting.
Yeah. What do you think it means that when you say the economy is doing well? What is the marker of that in such a way that you can kind of assess it within a matter of a couple of days? Like, how are they assessing the market improving?
I don't know. I'm not an economist. I don't really know. But they're probably looking at like what's getting invested in, who's doing what.
And so how can they tell what's getting invested in, etc.?
Well, like looking at like corporate like information, like who's like what's getting money, what's not, what companies are saying they're doing. Looking at like trends in the economy, what stocks are up, what stocks are down.
So I think it's really the last because, you know, publicly traded companies have to give quarterly reports to the government, to the SEC, but that's going to take a long time before you see a reaction to an election that just happened a few days ago, right? But what reacts immediately is the stock market and other kinds of markets, the bond market and stuff like that. So
they did talk about like government bonds, like 10-year, 30 interest bonds are like, so I don't really remember exactly what it was like, but the interest is like interest is up or something. People are expecting more government borrowing and stuff.
Right, they're expecting more government borrowing.
Yeah.
Right. And why would that be?
I don't really know why.
Wouldn't you normally think, because often people think, oh, it's the Democrats, they're the party of big government, they're going to have
Republicans are gonna, spending. They're gonna cut the social, Republicans are going to cut the social services, stuff like that.
Right. So
I don't know why
would you think that the markets would expect more borrowing with the Trump election?
I don't really know. I can't really think of a reason.
Cutting taxes.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Right. So this is the irony, is that typically the Republicans have been the party of fiscal austerity or conservatism or being careful with the money, and have, you know, often campaigned against thus ballooning federal debt. And yet Trump's approach to the economy, which in a sense you could call a sort of huge give back to the elites. Republicans have traditionally been the party of lower budget deficits, but when you cut taxes dramatically, in general, you have to borrow more. So these are all predictions that people are making.
Nothing's for certain. It's a few days. It's hard to tell. Economies are goofy like that. They're very finicky.
Yeah, and of course, the people, you know, the market, quote unquote, is an assemblage of heavily influenced by, you know, private equity, meaning huge billionaires, the billionaire class, essentially, who are making their own calls on what's going on. But they have kind of insider information as a class. Then there's also a lot of retail investors who may be much more influenced by kind of the news of the day, their emotions and things like that. There's a common pattern, and you're noticing, as you say, you listen to NPR, you know, which people consider progressive or something like that, but it still makes this same mistake, or I would say call it a mistake, which is to consider the economy to be equivalent to the stock market.
Yeah.
Right.
I definitely heard a lot about, like, those are very conflated. Those are like, oh, if the stock market's good, the economy's good. If the stock market's bad, the economy is bad.
What? Why does that make sense, and why is it not true?
Because, well, like, if companies are doing great and people are doing good and, like, stuff like what you presume is the economy is doing good, people, more people would be buying stuff, more companies would be going public, the stocks would be up, stuff like that. And if it was companies were doing bad, people had less money, there's less slush money to go around.
Right.
People are more saving, more conservative with their money. There'd be less buying. People are more selling their stuff, and that's usually an economic downturn.
Right. Certainly one would imagine that if corporations are profitable, then their prices will go up. And if they're profitable, then they have extra money that they can also pay workers. And then workers' wages will be going up, and so everyone will be doing better.
Yeah.
Is that always true?
Well, no, because when companies make more money, they don't always give their work, they don't always increase worker wages.
Right. And why not?
Because they want even more profits.
Right. And what does cause worker wages to increase?
Like unionizing, strikes, stuff like that, or federal minimum wage increases and stuff.
Federal minimum wage increases. Most people make more than the minimum wage, so the federal minimum wage only affects a certain minority of workers, although it does affect everyone else as well, because of course then, you know, at some level people want to have more, make more money than the minimum wage, and so then all the wages increase a little bit. Yeah, so certainly strike action, worker solidarity can force wages up, can essentially pressure the capitalist class. What's another form of pressure that's not that?
Legal pressure, I guess. You could like pressure them legally.
Good, legally. But what's the most common, you know, this is actually core to capitalist ideas, supply and demand of labor.
Oh, yeah. Like, so if there's like a lot of unemployed people, the prices, the wages would go down. Right. Since, like, it's sort of like, I've heard it called like the army of the unemployed, exactly. Where like, you want to have the capitalists want an unemployed population, because then they'd be like, oh, well, just fire you, get someone else.
Exactly.
So if the low unemployment's really low, it's really good, because there's like job scarcity. Like jobs, like if there's less people to do the job, then
labor scarcity. Labor scarcity has historically been a very, very common and very and the most prevalent form of pressure on wages to go up. It's hidden in a language in the economists of acting as is all the, just the laws of the market, and it's totally impersonal. But ultimately, the ideology of capitalism and of, you know, classical economics is to force people to be out of work. Force enough people to be out of work to keep wages from rising, because people consider that the core reason for inflation is increased wages, rather than assuming, you know, that it's increasing prices.
Yeah.
Which
governments could also just have like, oh, have a price cap. Like, you can't sell this thing for more than this.
Right. Well, if you just impose that on a capitalist system,
yeah,
it causes a lot of distortions, because people will try to find ways to, around it. And then you just get a kind of weird system where, you know, capitalists will be like, well, we don't want to make bread. If bread is sold so low that we can't make money on it, we'll make something else. And then there's not enough bread.
Well, but if you do that for everything.
But then you have the problem of a central planned economy, and that can work.
And they couldn't just stop. Yeah, they couldn't just stop making stuff, because then they'd have to make no profit. So they have to make something.
Right. That's a long topic. It's a good topic. You know, my personal orientation is that while a centrally planned economy can be better, you know, than a capitalist one, there's a real value in having both the intelligence of decentralized organization around what people do and how people do it, and also that there's a sense, there's a value to the freedom that happens when people are able to make their own decisions about how they work and how they share.
That's fair.
So historically, there's been this idea that the only two options are a centrally planned Soviet-style economy
or
versus...
Or like capitalist anarchy of production, companies do whatever they want, price whatever they want,
right.
Give whatever, wage whatever they want, and just do the, and just, it's just all up to the market.
Yeah, did you say anarchy of production?
Yeah.
A strange sort of anarchy in which you have essentially these extreme oligarchies, which are how the corporations are internally organized.
Sort of like ANCAPs, it's sort of societies.
Exactly. So one frame of what's the result of the election is, how's it affecting the markets? And then there's this image that people have that's directly correlated to
the economy and how much you're going to get paid, how good you're going to get.
And that's really not the same. And I think we should imagine that in addition to tariffs resulting in a lot of local investment, which can happen, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for protectionist economic policies.
But I've also heard that it's just going to cause like prices to go up.
Why is that going to happen?
Because the government's not going to charge, and the companies are going to be like, well, if it costs more for us to import it, we'll just increase the price, so then we don't lose as much profit.
And so in a sense, tariffs masquerade as a tax on importers or on the producers in other countries, but they actually end up being a tax on who?
The consumers.
Exactly. A pretty dramatic one.
If, it's like 60% or whatever.
Yeah. You know, it can result in an increase in domestic production.
And then,
this is one of the weird things, is that Trump really is proposing a populist agenda, kind of real smorgasbord of different policies. And it is outside the neoliberal consensus of how to operate the global economy. And there could be, you know, there could be some interesting outcomes of all that. But I guess the take home that I would want to have is how to reorient ourselves away from how the capitalists describe their economy towards what influence and control we can have as regular folks, either as workers inside a capitalist economy or as people attempting to create at least partial counter-capitalist or anti-capitalist forms of work and exchange. How do we do that, you know, especially in these new conditions? Is there anything else that you've been seeing or experiencing as a result of the last few days?
No, not really. I can't really think of anything. It's been pretty, like, people are just trying to be like, hey, paper trish me. Like, it doesn't exist. It's fine.
Right.
Trump denialist. It. Like, it's just, we're just gonna ignore that part and do life.
You've seen a bunch of that, huh?
So, not a bunch, yeah. But I've only seen that, yeah.
That's certainly a coping mechanism. What I've seen a lot of, and maybe, you know, you're a little bit less connected to this, understandably. What I've seen a lot of in the movements and organizations and nonprofit world that I'm connected to, and many of the different kind of more visible change organizations that are out there, are seeing a lot of people who are like, what can we do? And I think that there's a sense that perhaps, you know, you remember 2016, people were immediately in the streets. There's been a lot less of that this time. 2016, there was this shock and outrage, and there was this incredible swell of organizing. It was, you know, all kinds of organizations just had so many more people wanting to get involved.
Now it's a lot more like, oh, well, he won.
Yeah, I think there's more resignation. But I guess even if it's a smaller swell, we are seeing a swell of people who are interested in doing things, right? And we're also seeing a number of proposals out there. And there's kind of different proposals for what to do in this moment.
I'd like to hear about some of those.
Yeah. So maybe something that we could do is we could kind of explore a few different pieces of writing that have been put out, short things, websites, or
pamphlets, maybe.
Emails, pamphlets, exactly, zines, blogs. And we can discuss what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. You know, I think that what's going to be most easily accessible and most visible is, what do you think? Who are going to be the people that are going to be responding in the way that you're going to see most?
The liberals.
Liberals, right. And so the Democratic Party, essentially. And what are you...
Progressives.
Or progressives, right. Yeah, progressives or liberals with an electoral orientation. The people that are on MSNBC, you know, of course, there's another approach of what's happening, which we're also seeing a lot of, which is Trump's cabinet appointments and who he's putting on the transition team and, you know, how exactly all of that's going to play out. And there's this kind of mingled horror and macabre fascination that, you know, a lot of the elite journalists are observing, this potentially kind of shaking the roots of the American project.
What does DSA have to say about, like, DSA, like, at least at, like, administration?
Democratic Socialists of America.
Yeah.
The DSA is one of those organizations that saw an enormous swell of participation after 2016. A lot of that was, I think, folks who were involved in Bernie's campaign pivoting into that, and it was also, you know, a moment in which people were really casting about looking for more structural alternatives, and socialism felt like something new and exciting for a lot of people. The DSA, I'm sure, is going to see another swell of participation. I think there has been a challenge, which is that the DSA has supported a few people in getting elected, AOC being the most prominent among them. And, you know, AOC has kind of become much more liberal as she has been more a part of the party. You know, it's taking fewer direct confrontational approaches and is becoming quote a realist, right? And quote realism in the context of the Democratic Party means
trying to get reelected.
Trying to get reelected, number one, which, and there's some assumptions about what that means. And then secondly, trying to have an impact, which there's assumptions that means playing the game, et cetera, et cetera. So that has led to some disillusionment, and there's also just organizational dynamics. So yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly what happened. That can be something to explore, both what the DSA different DSA organs are saying publicly, as well as, you know, perhaps we can try to talk to people who are involved and just see what it's like on the inside. The Sunrise Movement is another space of youth, particularly focused on climate change, but have become very connected over the last year or two to a more worker-oriented sense of how to, you know, urge forward structural change, you know, in the economy. So we can look to them. And there's lots of other organizations.
Big and small. Or just like individual people.
Yeah. If you were to try to imagine what kind of approach would you like to explore right off the bat? Like, what do you think might could be most applicable to you in your thinking or your life?
But like youth has to do with this. Like, what youth organizations, maybe something like Sunrise, like what youth organizations are doing.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Another thing that people are doing is education around what people in different movements historically and around the world have done when faced with kind of a dire situation like this one. So we can do that as well. So that's a little bit of a map forward. How has this been for you so far? Has it been talking together and thinking about the world in a way that you're sharing with others?
It's interesting. It's fun. It's a lot more structured, but it's interesting. It's sort of fun.
More structured than our freewheeling conversations.
Where they go very, this is a lot more, less convoluted, a lot less jumping from topic to topic.
Well, maybe we should jump from topic to topic. Maybe that would fit the mimetic attention span a little bit better. You could try to talk in memes more effectively. Yeah, you know, I think this time I talked a little bit more than before and talked a little bit more than you did. And I really
fun.
Do want to find a way that's really a give and take as well. And then I think that'll happen as we've got something to read and talk about. Yeah, I can imagine, as you said, there's a lot of people who are kind of just ducking their head and being like, oh no, what are we going to do now? And it can be hard to shift from that or to hold that along with a kind of more analytical, heady kind of space. So, but we'll do our best.
Yeah.
All right. Any final words on this Saturday morning?
Hope everyone has a good weekend.
Yeah.
Especially with stays together, doesn't get too doom scrolled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Try to get out. It hasn't started raining yet.
Yep. So. What were we doing yesterday, Raven? We were
finishing up building a little structure, or building the foundations of a structure.
Yeah, the bones of putting up the rafters of a new
hexagonal-shaped thing.
Yeah, a structure outside on the land here. It's pretty large, pretty hefty beams, and we got that done before the rains came.
Yeah.
But today is still a beautiful day.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we can always remind ourselves, is to take a moment to go outside, to feel the air, and recognize that the world's much bigger than any one particular moment or
event.
Election.
Yeah.
So with that, we'll say goodbye for now. Once again, this is the Dad Son Revolution podcast. We are doing this down and dirty. We don't have a production team. We don't have a promotion team. If you would like to get involved, if you'd like to support what we're doing, contact us at podcast@brushwork.us, and we'd love to be connected.
See
you so much. Bye bye.